part of her would have been happy to let Seth volunteer. Why just one of us?
The weight arisen may will vary depending on the person, Patton said. Think of it as if there are 1,000 right ways to her and 1,000,000 wrong ways. Groups tend to argue and get killed.
But don't we all need to get there? Kendra asked.
If she agrees to help you, Risen May will summon the rest of us, and we'll get there easily, Patton said.
If she doesn't agree to help? Kendra asked.
It gets scary in many ways, Patton said. At this point, without her help, I'm not sure if we can reach Stormguard Castle in time.
How do I find her? Kendra asked.
To those who don't know the secret, the Bewilderness is a death trap, Patton said. The trick is simple, but not easy. Once you get inside the Bewilderness, you must always go the direction that feels most wrong.
The way that feels wrong? Kendra checked.
If you go the way that feels right, it will lead you into a fatal trap, Patton said. I know of poisonous thorns, covered pits, monsters with limited domains, and those are just the dangers I have witnessed or heard about.
What if I don't feel anything? Kendra asked.
Going in a neutral direction will also take you the wrong way and eventually kill you. Inside the Bewilderness, always go against your instincts.
That sounds difficult, Lomo said.
It can be, Patton said. Take it slow. Beware of finding a way that feels wrong and deciding it must be right. Once it feels right, it will be wrong. Only keep going if it feels truly wrong.
I'm terrible for this, Kendra said. I overthink all the time.
Truth, Seth said.
That could be an advantage if you take it slow, Patton said. Don't advance if it seems like the right way, or if you have reason to suspect you will get where you want to go. Don't head off in a random direction. Make sure it truly feels wrong, as hopeless as possible, and you will eventually make it.
No horse? Kendra asked.
You don't want an animal in there, Patton said. It's harder for them to work against strong instincts.
The camel would rather be a bystander, Babak said.
We're thinking horses, Charlemagne pointed out. We can play the same mind games as you humans.
You could succeed as an intelligent horse, Patton said. You might be able to betray your instincts. But if a thinking horse goes with Kendra, your roots will not match, and you will confuse each other.
I'll do it, Kendra said. I should probably get going.
Start promptly, Patton said, but don't hurry. Take your time and get it right.
Meaning get it wrong, Seth said. Get every step wrong. Kendra nodded. She had lived her life trying to get things right. Good grades mattered to her. So did pleasing her parents. She often earned perfect scores on tests. Couldn't she reverse the tendency? Get this perfectly wrong? She looked at the horses, the camel, the rabbit, her friends, and her brother. See you soon. She turned and marched away from the sentient wood. She told herself not to look back. There was no way returning to Patton and the others was the right direction. She stopped. If it felt like the guaranteed wrong way, didn't she have to go back? She turned around. Seth, Lomo, Tanu, Nox, Patton, Glory, Noble, Charlemagne, Rodolfo, Captain, Thistleton, and Babak all stood watching her. Calvin was too small to see at this distance. She wanted to return to them. That felt safe. What felt worse was going onward, and so she did. Every step away from her brother and her friends took her closer to a point where she might not have the ability to find her way back, and that felt terrible. She waded through undergrowth that sometimes snagged at her pant legs. The rising and falling terrain soon left her surrounded by trees large and small. Up ahead, two low hills came into view, with a natural path leading between them. It was the obvious way to proceed. Kendra paused. Less convenient would be climbing the hills, but she would get a good view at the top. It seemed like a smart idea, so she disregarded it. Heading back toward her brother still felt comforting. Going left or right showed no obvious advantage. As she considered both more carefully, she had a bad feeling about going left. It would lead into some thick trees that would take away her lines of sight. The more she thought about it, the worse it felt. So she went left. As Kendra progressed, it continued to feel like a bad idea until she was inside a dense grove of smallish trees. There was little undergrowth and no clear paths. Before long, she began to lose her sense of direction. Was she curving north? South? Back toward where she had entered? There was a sameness among these trees that left her disoriented. She figured she would just keep going as straight as she could. That seemed the most reasonable choice under the circumstances, and Kendra stopped. What felt worst? Doubling back. She reversed direction. As she walked, she felt unease about veering left, so she did. It kept feeling bad, and she kept going. Something in her gut warned her to go back the way she had come. She ignored it. Every step felt like a bad idea, so bad that it had to be the right way. Kendra stopped. What really felt unsettling was going right. The realization that it felt bad did not make it feel good. She turned right and tried to keep going straight. There were several other adjustments before she emerged from the trees, uncertain what direction she was facing. The sun remained too high for her to get oriented. Onward she traveled, meticulously aware of whatever direction felt the worst. She shoved through denser underbrush instead of choosing easier ways. She traversed foreboding thickets and clambered up awkward slopes. She waded through gooey mud when drier paths were available. Part of Kendra worried she was taking the advice too far, making her path unnecessarily difficult. But if Patton was right, she always needed to pursue the way that seemed worst to her, and that was sometimes very inconvenient. Time passed, the sun slowly sliding across the sky. She felt lost, and she was certain she was only getting more lost, killing time when she needed to hurry. Kendra reached a place where all directions were more or less open. Any direction seemed as good as any other, including doubling back. What could she do when all ways felt equal? She tried setting off in one direction or another, but kept halting because it felt fine. Then she noticed the hole. It barely looked large enough for a person to squeeze inside. Maybe a burrow for a badger or some other medium-sized animal. Did badgers have burrows? Climbing into the hole undeniably seemed like a really foolish way to proceed. It clearly would not go anywhere, just a few feet down to an unseen dead end. All other ways seemed much better. This would be a complete waste of time. Sighing, Kendra got down on her hands and knees and peered into the dark hole. It went down at an angle, curving out of sight. She could see no end. It truly seemed like a horrible idea. Looking around, she hoped some direction would feel worse. Nothing came close. Lying down flat, Kendra squirmed into the hole. It was uncomfortably snug. She had to worm forward on her elbows, swiveling her shoulders, pushing with her feet. Every inch forward felt like a bad idea. Would she be able to back up if the tunnel came to an end? The thought made her claustrophobic. Spindly roots tickled her head and the back of her neck. She could taste the soil in the air. What if the roof caved in? What if it got so narrow she became fully stuck, unable to proceed or retreat? The little tunnel went deeper, the angle of descent steepening. Inching forward became easier, but she wondered if backing up the incline would even be possible. The tunnel finally ended at another hole. The only way in was head first. Even with her fairy kind sight, she could not perceive the ground in the dimness, maybe because it was dark soil, like in the tunnel. She reached into the hole, but could not feel the ground. How far was the drop? 5 feet? 10? 100? Dropping into the hole seemed like a horrible idea. Trying to squirm out backwards felt much more sensible, even though it would be difficult. Where was she supposed to draw the line with bad ideas? If the worst way to proceed was jumping off a cliff onto jagged rocks, would she do it? Wasn't that going beyond choosing the worst direction to travel? Wasn't that just being absurdly reckless? Scooting into the hole in a tunnel with an uncertain drop seemed suicidal. It struck her as a likely way to break her neck. But in order to find Risen May, she was supposed to always disobey her instincts. Perhaps if she disobeyed too well, it would kill her. Was she taking the idea too far, disobeying all common sense? Kendra scooted into the hole, trying to brace herself against the sides to keep from falling fast. And suddenly, there were no sides, and she was falling. Kendra shrieked and slowly spun in the air, deliberately trying to land on her feet. During a period of rapid acceleration, she was able to think about the fall and fear for her life. It was a long drop. The impact of the water shocked her. She hit feet first, sinking deep but not touching the bottom. She stroked upward, reached the surface, and gulped air. The water was still, the room dim. She could not see walls in any direction. Treading water, her clothes billowing as she moved, she thought about which direction felt worse. Seeing only more water in all directions, she had almost no sensory input to go by. But one way gave her an uncomfortable feeling. The feeling persisted and even grew as she stroked in that direction. She tried to stay calm. Kendra had never been entirely comfortable with swimming, and being weighed down by her clothes was an odd sensation. She wondered if she should try to take off her shoes, but thought the effort might make her sink, and for now, she was staying afloat. In time, the shore came dimly into view. Heading to the lake shore felt inexplicably like a bad idea, so she went there. Kendra emerged, dripping wet, shivering in the cool air of the cavern. She spent a moment wringing her clothes out as best she could. Now she could see the wall of the cavern, including the opening to what might be a tunnel or a cave. She also had room to proceed along the lakeshore in either direction. Something about the tunnel gave her an uncomfortable feeling. It seemed like it must be the lair of some animal or monster. The more she thought about going into the tunnel, the worse the idea sounded. So she went. It ran for a long distance, and every step seemed to bring her closer to doom. At length, she reached a junction of 5 passages, and Kendra paused. None of the ways stood out as bad. None felt terribly good either. After some searching, she found a smaller tunnel slanting upward. It seemed too narrow, and she suspected it would lead to trouble. So in she went. The passage constricted and widened again and again. She scooted through the snug places, hoping not to get stuck. Eventually daylight came into view, and she crawled out of a crack near the base of a large boulder. Kendra resumed traveling above ground. She felt bad about a wooded area, went there, and became completely turned around. Time and again, Kendra ignored the routes that looked promising in deference to her most uncertain and disquieted instincts. She pushed through dense vegetation, climbed unwelcoming slopes, avoided pleasant meadows, abandoned inviting streams, and generally made the way difficult for herself. Eventually, her clothes dried. She kept an eye on the sun as it got lower. Once it vanished, Midsummer Eve would start. Kendra did not want to get caught out in the open when that happened. She picked up her pace, hurrying wherever she felt she should not go, stopping to reassess when she seemed to be heading in a good direction. As she emerged from a thick stand of young trees, a pond came into view. A series of stepping stones led to an island in the center of the pond. Soothing music came from the island, though Kendra couldn't be sure whether instruments or voices generated the sound. There was also a glow from an unseen source on the island, bright enough to register despite the daylight. Could this be it? Had she finally made it? Kendra paused and looked around. On the far side of the pond rose a low bluff. She noticed a dark cleft in the rock. Kendra tore her eyes away. No! She did not want to go back underground. That had been scary. She was lucky she hadn't died. The cleft in the rock seemed like a terrible idea, especially now that she had found the probable location of the ferry. Kendra closed her eyes and thought hard, searching her feelings. The cleft seemed like a huge mistake. She opened her eyes, walked around the pond to the cleft, and went inside. She did not have to duck, but the way forward was twisty. After several turns, she saw light up ahead. She realized it probably meant danger. A tribe of goblins could inhabit this cave, or worse. Kendra took a few more turns and emerged into a bright, sparkling cavern. Glossy white walls of calcite bristled with glittering quartz crystals. A tall, beautiful brunette wearing a shimmering white gown framed by a pair of elaborate wings stood awaiting her.
"Congratulations, mortal,"
the fairy said with a smile that conveyed pure, welcoming joy.
"You have found me."
"Risen May?" Kendra asked. The fairy's smile became less an expression of joy and more a shape her mouth was making.
"You know my name," she said. "Someone helped you find me?"
"A stingbulb of Patton Burgess," Kendra said. "I knew to work against my instincts." The smile warmed a bit.
"Patton was a charming man. Still no small feat that you arrived."
"He warned me to follow the way that felt worst to me," Kendra said.
"Had you entered the bewilderness unawares, following your best instincts would have led you to a clue. It would have suggested the same advice Patton offered, though a touch more poetically, I suppose. There are many such warnings around the perimeter of this realm, each with an attractor spell. After the warning, you would then have to follow the least welcoming route to survive. You skipped my personal warning due to the tip Patton gave you."
Her smile faltered.
"Amazing how many people fail to reach me. More than 9 out of 10 die instead."
"So many," Kendra exclaimed.
"I can't offer something for nothing," Risen May said. "It is interesting to watch how many individuals cannot obey simple instructions."
"Is it worth killing them?" Kendra asked.
"I don't kill them," Risen May said. "Their choices do that."
"But you let them walk through a dangerous place knowing they might die," Kendra said.
"Dying is what mortals do best," Risen May said. "It's your inheritance. You are visitors in this world. From the moment you are born, the end looms. The question is not if, rather when and how."
"We get to live before we die," Kendra said. "That matters to us. We want it to last."
"I don't mind any life lasting a little longer," Risen May said. "I'm not against you living. I don't cheer for death. I'm just aware that none of you endure for very long, no matter how desperately you cling to life."
"It matters to my friends and family how long I live," Kendra said. "And to me."
"Did you come all this way to lecture me, dear one?"
Risen May asked.
"To teach me lessons from your finite experience that I have not learned in thousands of years?"
"I might know things about being immortal that you don't," Kendra said.
"Does that somehow obligate me to think like a mortal?" Risen May asked. Are you required to learn to think like a dog or a mosquito? Can you not appreciate a dog but think like a human?
I didn't come here to lecture you, Kendra said, not wanting to argue. Rizume gave a relieved smile.
That moves us in a better direction. Why have you come to me?
I need your help, Kendra said.
I see, Rizume replied. Something you cannot do for yourself.
Yes, Kendra said. My friends need help, too. All of Wormroost needs help. The whole world, really. I'm the caretaker here.
Now, child, I am a fairy, and not a mortal. But if I needed help, I might not approach my benefactor with a lecture on empathy for lesser beings, but rather pleading, begging, on my knees, perhaps.
Kendra got down on her knees.
Please.
Rizume shook her head, lovely tresses bouncing.
Nay, child, rise. Begging loses all effect once the petitioner has been invited to grovel.
Kendra stayed on her knees.
I mean it. I'm sorry if I was rude. It was hard getting here, and I'm worried about my friends. Please help me.
I see you are trying, Rizume said.
Arise, dear one, I insist. I detect your sincerity. You are very kind. A gift from the Fairy Queen?
Yes, Kendra said, getting to her feet.
Are you aware the current Fairy Queen is not a fairy?
Rizume asked. She's a unicorn, Kendra said.
Do you know who was Fairy Queen before her?
Rizume asked.
I didn't know there was another, Kendra said.
Queen is a position, not an individual, Rizume said. Just as Horus was Dragon King before Celebrant.
I don't know who preceded this Fairy Queen, Kendra said.
She was actually a fairy, Rizume said.
They were all fairies, in fact, before our current queen.
True fairies, like me.
You seem different from other fairies, Kendra said.
Rizume laughed richly.
You mean the tiny ones who flit about plagued with insecurity? Yes, child, I am a great fairy. We have various designations. Some mortals have taken to calling us fairy godmothers.
You're a fairy godmother? Kendra asked.
A quaint title, but yes. It helps make the proper distinction,
Rizume said.
We watch over the little ones, and one of us has always been queen. Until now.
Does that upset you? Kendra asked tentatively.
No more than it would upset you if a lovely, intelligent swan were queen of all humans,
Rizume said. Kendra scrunched her brow.
That would be weird.
But not completely undesirable,
Rizume said.
Lovely in some ways, and peculiar that the ruler of humans would not be a human.
The fairy queen can look like a fairy, Kendra said.
Then imagine instead a swan with a human avatar,
Rizume said.
But first and foremost, a swan.
I have seen other large fairies, Kendra said. Were they great fairies?
More likely small fairies made large,
Rizume said.
The great fairies were never small. Our powers and comprehension exceed theirs. We can do far more and can be generous benefactors when the mood strikes us. How may I help you?
We need transportation, Kendra said.
Patton suggested you come to me for transportation,
Rizume asked.
We all brought mounts, Kendra said. We have to get to Stormguard Castle an hour after the festival night begins.
Rizume narrowed her gaze.
Did this sting bulb tell you what I can do?
He couldn't, Kendra said.
That, at least, is a relief,
Rizume said.
I thought perhaps his temporary reincarnation might have bypassed his pledge to silence. He hinted, and then made sure you came prepared.
Can you help us? Kendra asked.
I can, Rizume said. But will I?
Kendra got down on her knees.
Please, Rizume, most beautiful of fairies,
My friends need help getting here before the festival night begins, and we must reach the castle at the right time, or Wormroost might fall to the dragons. All dragon sanctuaries might fall."
Risen May stifled a little yawn.
"You don't know why greater fairies take an interest in mortals, do you?"
"I'm not sure," Kendra said.
"You are very kind," Risen May said. "I can't read your mind. The wishes of your heart are hidden from me. Hints to what might motivate me survive in some of your stories."
"Cinderella had a fairy godmother," Kendra said.
"Did she?"
Risen May asked innocently. Kendra thought, what might pique her interest? "The boy I like is in danger." Risen May brightened.
"You like a boy?"
"I do," Kendra said. "He's older than me, so he's resistant. But he doesn't seem old."
"That sounds thrilling. Do you love him?"
"So much," Risen May clapped.
"Your love is the important part. I see that you mean it. Sometimes love is better when not fully returned, juicier, more interesting." "I'm so worried about him," Kendra said. "Is he handsome?"
Risen May asked.
"Insanely handsome," Kendra said. "It's not just me who thinks so. Naiads, fairies, everyone."
Risen May seemed delighted.
"He is mortal?"
"He's a unicorn."
"Wait, really? Does he have a name?"
"Bracken." Risen May covered her giggle.
"Of course you love Bracken. Who doesn't love Bracken? Sadly, this weakens your case a little. Makes your love a bit more generic. He is so aloof and admired by all. I'm sorry, my dear."
"He likes me back," Kendra said. Risen May looked at her skeptically.
"Can you be sure? The youth has a kind and jovial nature, often mistaken for affection."
"He gave me his first horn," Kendra said, touching it.
Risen May's eyes widened.
"Did he indeed? Goodness, child, why didn't you say so? Getting to Stormguard Castle will help your relationship."
"He's been captured," Kendra said. "Getting to the castle could save him."
Risen May laughed with delight.
"Children,"
she called in a sing-song tone.
"To me, my children, Mummy has an errand for you."
Chapter 24. Winging It.
"The sun is getting lower,"
Calvin said.
"That's how it works," Babbick said. "After midday, as time passes."
"Right, but when the sun sets, the festival night starts,"
Calvin said.
"And we all die."
"Makes the position of the sun an important topic," Patton said. "We have maybe half an hour left."
"Can we make it back to the Zawali place in half an hour?" Knox asked.
"Maybe," Captain replied, "if we leave now. And we run. And the trees don't mind."
"Are those fairies?" Seth asked, pointing into the bewilderness. Patton looked where Seth was pointing, and then let out a whoop.
"Kendra did it, friends! Risen May sent escorts! Mount up!"
As Seth climbed onto Noble, 11 fairies arrived. None looked like the rugged Wormroost fairies Seth had seen. These were colorful and delicate.
"Mistress Risen May requests your presence,"
one of the fairies announced in her high voice.
"We were sent to guide you."
"Lead on," Patton said. "We were hoping you would come."
"Stay with us,"
the fairy said.
"The way ahead is fraught with peril."
Patton took the lead, and Seth rode up beside him. The others fell in line behind.
"Kendra made it?" Seth asked. "She's safe? For sure?"
"No doubt," Patton said. "It's the only reason these fairies would come for us. Follow them closely."
The game of follow the fairies seemed a little absurd, the route unnecessarily circuitous over uncomfortable terrain. No roads, no paths, lots of winding. The talking mounts did not complain and maintained a brisk pace. Seth kept glancing as the sun slipped toward the horizon. Every time they made ridiculous turns that assured an indirect route, Seth clenched his teeth, reminding himself that they were steering around unseen death traps. But the setting sun was a death trap, too. Being exposed on Midsummer Eve at Wormroost would kill them as surely as anything else. A little space remained between the sun and the mountain tops when a promising pond came into view. An island at the center emitted a suspicious glow, and ethereal music chimed in the air. The fairies led them past the pond to an opening in the bluff beyond. Patton dismounted, and the others followed his lead. The fairies led them into the cavity in the bluff. Despite the close confines, the horses and the camel followed. The way wound back and forth around sharp bends. Seth emerged into a crystal cavern where a radiant human-sized fairy stood in a dazzling white gown. Kendra waved to him. He waved back, relieved to see that his sister was actually all right. "This is Risenmay," Kendra said. The fairy was gorgeous. Seth was not sure if he had ever seen a more beautiful woman, even among the fair folk.
"Welcome," Risenmay said. "Come inside. There is room for all horses, too. Oh, and a camel and a rabbit. Quite a menagerie. I met you back when you actually existed, Patton Burgess."
"I remember," Patton said. "You look as enchanting as ever."
"Oh, stop," she said,
color coming into her cheeks as she brushed a hand across one shimmery hip.
"I wasn't expecting company."
Seth rolled his eyes. The fairy looked like she was about to walk the red carpet at the Academy Awards.
"Sun is getting low," Patton said.
"You'll be safe here," Risenmay said. "I would give you shelter for the night, but I understand you hope to make it to Stormguard Castle an hour after the festival night begins."
"That's right,"
Patton said.
"What's with the island out there?" Seth asked. "It had music."
Risenmay laughed lightly.
"I suppose that is terrible of me. It is the last little trick on the way to my abode. A ferocious predator dwells in that pond. More visitors have succumbed to that trap than any others, the poor dears. For some reason they decide the end of the road is when they should stop following instructions."
"They get eaten?" Seth asked.
"Well, injected with toxins and left to ferment underwater in a gelatinous cocoon," Risenmay said. "But yes, eventually devoured. Bones and all."
"How will we get to the castle?" Knox asked.
"Don't be too hasty," Risenmay said. "To time this correctly, you want to wait several minutes before departure. And you must all make a solemn promise."
"What promise?" Seth asked.
"To keep my abilities a secret," Risenmay said.
"It's a generous offer for the aid we will receive," Patton said.
Risenmay extended her hand.
"Lay your hands on mine."
"All of us?" Patton asked.
"Yes, well, all of you with hands," Risenmay said.
Seth approached with Patton and the others, including Kendra, and they huddled around Risenmay, arms extended, hands piled on hers.
2, 4, 6, 8, who do we appreciate?" Knox chanted.
"Feels like a cheer after a game."
Seth snickered. It kind of did feel like that.
"The little one, too,"
Risenmay prompted.
"I sometimes get forgotten at times like these," Calvin said.
Seth helped the Nipsey from his pocket and put him on the top hand, which belonged to Lomo. Calvin knelt and placed his hand down.
"Repeat after me," Risenmay said. "I solemnly swear to keep what happens here a secret."
They repeated.
"And I grant Risenmay permission to bind my tongue and hold me to this oath."
They repeated again. Smiling, Risenmay withdrew her hand.
"Marvelous. Now the animals, rabbit included."
Risenmay repeated the exercise surrounded by the animals, each of them touching her with hoof or muzzle. The animals who could talk spoke the words.
"Thank you for being so compliant," Risenmay said. I felt agreement even from the Silent Ones. I hope Kendra will be able to recover her true love, and perhaps the high and mighty Bracken will finally succumb to Cupid's arrows.
Is this about Bracken? Seth asked.
Eventually, Kendra said, we can't save him if we lose the war.
True, Seth said.
He wanted to help Bracken too, but he was unsure why it was suddenly the top concern.
His focus was on surviving the night and foiling the dragons.
What are you going to do? Nox asked.
I have many abilities, Rizzenmay said. Perhaps my signature talent is the power to bestow wings.
You're going to give us wings? Seth asked.
I prefer not to bestow them upon humanoids, Rizzenmay said. I don't want common beings mistaken for fairies. But your mounts are another matter.
This must be where Miquette got her wings, Charlemagne said.
What?
Kendra asked.
Miquette was a mare who showed up with wings one day, Captain said, like a Pegasus. She refused to explain the origin.
She died at a ripe old age, Charlemagne said. A legend among the Luvians.
Patton was trying to say something. Rizzenmay waved a hand at him.
Go ahead, in this company.
Miquette was my horse, Patton said. For a time, at least. I brought her here and helped her get wings.
And you brought us for the same purpose, Seth said.
Each with a mount, Patton said.
I'm going to have a flying rabbit, Calvin exclaimed. Thistleton, do you want wings?
Yeah,
Thistleton said.
My family won't believe it.
Does this hold true for all of you? Rizzenmay asked. Will you accept my gift of wings? I must have confirmation to proceed.
With these wings we'll be able to fly, Charlemagne asked. Like Miquette, like a Pegasus.
The wings would be rather absurd if they didn't enable you to fly, Rizzenmay said. These wings will not only let you fly, you'll be able to maneuver really well.
And we'll always have the wings? Babak asked.
Always, Rizzenmay said, though you will not pass them to offspring. And you, sir, would be the first camel I have ever enhanced.
I might be the first flying camel in history, Babak said. I know of no others.
I need confirmation first, Rizzenmay said.
The five horses, the camel, and the rabbit all assented.
You're just going to make them sprout wings? Nox asked incredulously.
You be the judge, Rizzenmay said.
She spread her arms, and suddenly she gleamed with an intense white light that reflected off the calcite and refracted in the crystals. Vivid rainbows quivered in the intense glare. Rizzenmay chanted unintelligible words that filled Seth with buoyant excitement. When she lowered her arms, the radiance dimmed, and Seth was left blinking in an attempt to regulate his eyesight. As his vision adjusted, Seth saw the horses, the camel, and the rabbit all investigating their new wings, experimentally stretching one or flexing the other or tentatively flapping both. The rabbit leaped into the air and started darting around the cavern like a bat.
"Looking good, Thistleton!"
Calvin said.
"I suggest the larger creatures resist the urge to fly until they get outside," Rizzenmay said. "Looks like the enchantment was successful for all."
Seth crossed to Noble.
"You look great," he said.
His horse stamped and tossed his head. Kendra stroked Glory as the horse nuzzled her.
"Won't it be really dangerous riding to Stormguard Castle on a festival night?" Kendra asked.
Rizzenmay?
Patton asked.
I can help there, too,
Rizzenmay said, extending her arms again. A golden light infused the cavern, less intense than the previous glare. When the light faded, a golden glow lingered about the animals, particularly illuminating their wings.
I gave you my blessing. It will ward you from harm for a time, especially from the undead, and it will serve as a powerful distractor spell. As Kendra may have noticed on her way here, diverse attractor and distractor spells are a strength of mine.
Hatton clapped his hands and raised both fists in the air.
That was what we needed. Thank you, Risen May. We're all in your debt.
The beautiful fairy smiled and gave a gracious nod.
You owe me nothing, except to keep the nature of my abilities a secret. Do rain and sunlight ask repayment for the nourishment they provide? Do flowers require recompense from those gazing at their blooms? I help living things to blossom. I am a giver of gifts.
Unless people die trying to make it here, Seth mumbled. Risen May glanced at him archly.
That nourishes the flowers, too.
What's the timing? Tanu asked. We want to get there an hour after the sun went down, Patton said. Not sooner. Preferably not much later.
Depart in a few more minutes, Risen May said, as the camel flies.
Babak fluttered his wings and hovered a foot or two above the ground for a moment.
Sorry, the camel said. I know, not inside. It's hard to resist. What is the plan when we get there? Lomo asked. I will not be admitted to the castle, Patton said. Calvin might be denied as well, unless his small size allows admittance. Entering the castle will strip away all magic while you're inside. Potions won't work and magical items will lose their power. Kendra will no longer be fairy kind and Seth will not be a shadow charmer. Lomo will lose whatever abilities are part of his nature.
Not permanently? Kendra asked.
Only while inside the castle, Patton said.
What do you know of conditions inside the castle? Tanu asked.
Patton gave a weak smile.
Very little. I backed out before fully entering. I crossed the drawbridge to the gate and found a message embossed in a plaque on the wall, conquer or withdraw. It was a festival night, but my instincts warned me the castle would be worse. I withdrew.
Why did you go in the first place? Lomo wondered.
Nobody had achieved access to Stormguard Castle, Patton said. I knew boundaries come down on festival nights, so I gave it a try. Lost two friends that night. Had a hard time making it back to the roadhouse, but I survived.
So we don't know much, Nock said.
We know Celebrant will be heading for the castle as well, Seth said, or sending other dragons.
And once they step onto the drawbridge, they will be vulnerable, Patton said. Mortal.
I don't mind losing my potions if the dragons lose their powers, Tanu said. That trade benefits us.
It does, Patton said. The problem will be for any of you to survive the cursed castle. The prize is great. Finding the Wizen Stone would win the war for whoever claims it, but the obstacles will be significant as well.
We don't know what to expect from the curse, Nox asked.
No idea, Patton said. Except that none have ever left Stormguard Castle since the curse began, and none who explored in depth ever returned.
Except you, Seth clarified.
Well, I stood on the welcome mat, and then ran away, Patton said. I had no compelling reason to risk everything by going inside. Circumstances have changed. You have an excellent reason.
I recommend leaving now, Risen May said.
I wish I could join you inside, Patton said. Instead, I'll wrangle the mounts, help them get to the nearest roadhouse after dropping you off.
Let me fly ahead, Calvin offered. Thistleton is small. We can scout, see if the dragons are there.
That could be wise, Patton said with a nod. Thanks, Calvin.
Work for you, Seth? Calvin asked.
Sure, Seth replied. Don't get caught.
I'll keep him safe. Thistleton said. Climb aboard.
The rabbit landed beside Seth, who took Calvin from his pocket and placed him on the furry back. Calvin drew a tiny sword and waved it in the air. Thistleton took flight and shot out of the cavern.
The switchbacks on the way out are tight, Patton said, but we should mount up anyhow. We want to get airborne as soon as we exit. It will be safer in the sky.
Fly swift and true, Risen May said. Nowhere is safe at Worm Roost tonight.
Least of all the destination, Patton said.
We may not get to speak again before you enter the castle. Keep your wits about you.
We'll do our best, Kendra said, relieved to be following what felt right again after having had to fight her true instincts in the bewilderness. When Nox climbed onto Babic, Seth longed for a camera as never before. They all had cool flying horses, and Nox had the winged camel. He wanted to preserve the image for future generations. Seth mounted Noble and patted the horse.
Ready to fly?
He can't wait, Captain answered. None of us can. Follow us, Patton said, urging Captain forward.
Seth ducked down as he wound his way out of the cavern atop Noble. When they exited the little cave, Noble sprang into the sky, following Captain, and the ground fell away. Seth observed figures roaming the woods, but failed to get a clear view of them. Glancing back, he saw Kendra and the others rising behind him. Not all light had bled from the horizon yet. The late evening was alive with sounds. Drums pounded, beasts roared, victims screamed. Strange music infiltrated the night, unnameable instruments grinding out upsetting chords, foreign words chanted atonally. Chilling groans bespoke misery and longing. Disquieting screeches and bellows originated from unguessable sources. As Seth scanned the landscape, off to the left he saw an entire tree burst into flame. To the right, a blaze of lightning blasted a natural column of stone. Shadowy giants roamed the wilds below, and winged behemoths created fearsome silhouettes in the sky. Ephemeral shapes drew toward Seth, forcing Noble to climb and fall and swerve to avoid contact. The ghostly forms had large, grasping hands, wispy as smoke, but the air grew colder when they were near, and Seth could faintly discern their prolonged yearnings of hunger and thirst.
"Stay with me," Patton called, still gaining altitude.
Behind him, Seth saw the others still climbing into the fearful night. Certain sounds grew distant as they flew higher, but some of the most mournful moanings became more distinct. Most of the ghostly forms moved slowly, drifting more than flying, but one dark shape drew even with Seth. As Noble tried to veer away, the entity stayed near them. More clearly delineated than the other spectral beings, it looked like a gargoyle made from concentrated darkness.
"A dangerous night to fly, Shadow Charmer."
The icy words entered Seth's mind as distinctly as if he had heard them.
"Leave me alone,"
Seth said, deliberately not staring at the speaker, but keeping him in his peripheral vision.
"I could tear you from the sky,"
the voice said.
"I could gorge myself on your warmth, quench your fragile spark."
"I'd rather you didn't," Seth said.
"You have much to learn and little time,"
the chilling voice said.
"Let me teach you."
"I'm on a mission tonight," Seth said.
"You could defeat the dragons,"
the voice said.
"Leave their shattered husks in your wake. You could explore a night like this without fear. You could save those you love. You could thrive. Let me teach you."
"No deals," Seth said,
unsure if rejection would make the tenebrous gargoyle attack.
"I do things my way."
"You saw toward the castle,"
the voice said.
"Your doom awaits. Without my help, you will fall."
"I'm sorry," Seth said. "I don't want help from flying shadow people."
"What I now offer cannot be bought,"
the voice said.
"In your hour of need, you may regret denying my proposal."
"I've regretted lots of things," Seth said, "especially making deals with darkness."
"Very well,"
the voice said.
The dark figure swerved away, almost immediately becoming indistinguishable from the rest of the night. Seth was left with an unsettled feeling, as if the howls and shrieks and groans and geysers of distant dragon fire weren't scary enough. Now he got to wonder what exactly had approached him. Stormguard Castle came into view in the distance because it was illuminated. At first, Seth thought it might have electricity. A series of swooping dives brought them nearer to the castle. As they approached, Seth recognized magical light globes providing the luminance. Patton pulled up into a slow glide, and Seth realized Calvin was reporting astride his rabbit. Seth leaned in their direction, and Noble glided closer. Kendra, Tanu, Lomo, and Nox tightened into formation around Patton as well.
"Three people just entered the castle," said Calvin. "Two wore light armor, the third had a full suit of it, a woman and two men. The guy in the full suit had a dragon on his shield. Might have been celebrant, but I'm not sure. I assume they were dragons in human form. I got as close as I could, but neither Thistleton nor I could get above the drawbridge. The knight in full armor noticed me and came to take a swipe at me. As I flew away, they entered the castle."
"This was just a minute ago?" Patton asked.
"If that," Calvin said.
"All right," Patton said, glancing over at Seth and the others. "Ready to follow some dragons into Stormguard Castle?"
"I finally get to spend real time with dragons, and they look like people," Nox complained.
"You just rode a flying camel through a sky full of ghosts," Seth said. "Be grateful."
Patton urged Captain forward. The others followed. Chapter 25. Silver and Gold. Kendra felt relieved to have her feet back on the ground, even if she was standing near the drawbridge of a cursed castle. Being chased through the sky by shadowy phantoms with a horror soundtrack in the background had negated the fun of riding a flying horse.
"Thank you, Glory," Kendra said, petting her mount. "Stay safe."
"Good luck," Patton said. "I'll get our trusty steeds to a roadhouse and come for you after sunrise."
"Let me try to enter one more time," Calvin said, dismounting Thistleton and sprinting toward the castle.
Once he reached the drawbridge, he collided with an unseen barrier and stumbled backward.
"Don't try to force it, Calvin," Patton said. "It could kill you."
"Wraiths," Lomo warned.
Kendra turned and found six dark forms striding toward them, having emerged from the nearest grove of trees. Lomo drew his sword and placed himself between the wraiths and the group.
"Get onto the drawbridge," Patton said from astride Captain. "Horses, camel, rabbit, with me!"
Captain took flight, and the other mounts followed. Calvin had climbed back onto Thistleton, and the rabbit took to the air as well. Kendra hurried onto the drawbridge. The moment her feet were on the wood, the boisterous noise of the festival night ceased. Sword held ready, still facing the oncoming wraiths, Lomo was the last to back onto the drawbridge. The wraiths hesitated at the edge of the drawbridge. One tried to move forward and was hurled back with a sizzling flash, falling to the ground. Kendra felt some relief. At least she might not die in the icy clutches of a wraith tonight. The fallen wraith arose. The other wraiths milled about for a moment before withdrawing some distance. They huddled together, seeming to watch.
"Why is it so quiet?" Nox asked.
"Because you aren't talking," Seth said.
"The defensive barrier of the castle seems to filter everything," Tanu said. "Even sound."
"Unusually powerful," Lomo said.
Drawing his sword, Seth led the way across the drawbridge. At the far side of the bridge, a raised portcullis granted access to the castle.
"Not so fast," Tanu said. "Give the dragons a moment. We don't want to enter right behind them." "Think we could catch them by surprise?" Lomo asked. It would be nice if they don't know we're here for a time, Tanu said. Celebrant in full armor could be more of a fight than any of us are prepared to handle.
It might not be Celebrant, Kendra said.
I suspect it is, Lomo said. The Wizened Stone is too powerful. He would not trust his underlings enough to send any of them unsupervised. He undoubtedly wants the Wizened Stone for himself.
We have to break the curse by sunrise, don't we? Seth asked. At least, that's when the festival night ends. How long do we wait?
Not long, Tanu said.
Think they have alligators? Nox asked, peering off the edge of the drawbridge into the murky water of the moat.
Probably worse, Seth said. We're at a dragon sanctuary. Think monsters.
Nox backed away from the edge. Kendra looked up at the castle. Though enormous, even at night, it did not look terribly sinister. Walls of gray stone, topped with battlements, stretched from one rounded tower to another. Beyond the outer wall, a mounting series of towers, balconies, terraces, walkways, chimneys, and rooftops piled in an artful jumble up to the highest pinnacles.
All right, Tanu said softly. Stay quiet. We want to keep the element of surprise.
This must be where Patton turned back, Seth said, pointing to the wall just beyond the portcullis.
Conquer or withdraw. Kendra looked behind her and saw the wraiths waiting at the other end of the drawbridge.
I'm not sure a retreat is an option now, she said.
In we go,
Tanu whispered. As Seth stepped off the drawbridge into the tunnel through the gate, the splash of a gong reverberated from deep within the castle. Kendra flinched at the loud noise, then winced as it sounded again when Lomo entered the tunnel.
Let's enter together, Tanu whispered.
He, Kendra, and Nox stepped into the tunnel at the same time and were greeted by three rapid crashes of the gong. After a moment, the metallic shimmer faded into silence.
So much for surprise, Kendra murmured.
Will there be monsters?
Nox asked.
There could be anything, Lomo said. Stay loose.
At the far side of the tunnel, through the wall, they found a wide courtyard dominated by a large fountain in the center. Water gushed from several spouts to tumble from one level to another before reaching the large basin at the bottom. Life-sized human statues, each composed of silver or gold, stood around the courtyard seemingly at random, most positioned as if running. A few gold statues were locked in frozen combat with silver ones. One pair wrestled on the ground.
Those look expensive, Nox said.
Seth crouched down at the far end of the tunnel, where he found large words emblazoned on the floor. Kendra and the others huddled near him.
Shed no blood. Break no bone. Stop no heart.
Think the dragons will play by the castle rules? Kendra asked.
Depends on what they think they can get away with, Tanu said.
This warning is likely connected to the curse, Lomo said. Whatever the dragons decide to do, we should heed the command.
Seth sheathed his sword. Lomo did likewise.
Are those statues pure gold?
Nox asked, crossing to the nearest one.
Don't touch it, Tanu said. We don't understand what is going on here yet.
The poses are strange, Kendra said. Running and fighting.
I don't see any living people, Seth said.
Kendra scanned the quiet courtyard and the still castle.
Neither do I.
Lomo leaned in close to the statue beside Nox.
That's real gold. At least the exterior. Probably not solid gold all the way through.
He glanced around at some of the other statues.
Nobody has that much wealth.
Can we still exit?
Seth asked.
Good question,
Tanu said, trotting back to the tunnel through the wall. He banged against an invisible barrier at the mouth of the tunnel and stumbled backwards, then turned and gave a sheepish grin.
Looks like we're trapped here,
So much detail on these statues, Nock said, reaching a hand toward a golden face.
No touching, Tanu reminded him.
Exquisite, Lomo agreed. Each a true individual.
They could be real people, Kendra said, turned into gold and silver.